sabrosura pa ti que que.
Hello, everyone. This is Pam, the Café con Pam, the bilingual podcast that features Latina and people of color that break barriers, change lives, and make this world a better place. Welcome to episode 199 of Café con Pam. Today, we have a conversation with Dania Rivas. As the founder of Inclusively Outdoors, LLC, Dania Rivas specializes in working with organizational leaders who want to cultivate a diverse, equitable, and inclusive workplace culture that fosters a sense of belonging among historically underrepresented voices in the environmental and outdoor industries. She focuses on preparing individuals and institutions for rapid demographic change and firmly believes that diverse representation is vital to our environment and community's health. Acting on her commitment to community, culture, and connection to nature, she is a graduate of the National Outdoor Leadership School, holds a Master of Education degree in Environmental Studies, and is a Certified Professional Diversity Coach, CPDC, as well as a Certified Professional Coactive Coach, CPCC. Dania is a member of the International Coaching Federation and holds a position as the first and only Latina board member while serving as the Pro Bono Coaching Initiative Client Director for the ICF Oregon Chapter. Dania happily resides in Portland, Oregon with her dog, Bella, her cat, Willow, and her tortoise, Pedro, and her two rabbits, Bruja y Brujo. Oh my gosh. I had to laugh, but those names are hilarious. So, listeners, Dania is super awesome. We had an amazing conversation. This is long overdue, actually. We had been talking about bringing her on the show for, I would say like a year. But she was busy, I was busy, and finally we made it happen. So this is long overdue, and it was great. We had a fantastic conversation. We are kindred spirits. She loves nature. I love nature. Her work is incredible. And I think, like, we're related. You'll hear me say this because as she was talking, we do this over a video call. And as I was looking at her talk, I'm like, are we cousins or something? Because we look alike. And like when she smiles. Anyway, it was a very interesting conversation. Like, not conversation, but it was just interesting to see someone who really resembles me physically. It was quite funny. But it was super fun. Embody radical liberation, spirituality, and mindful productivity. Are you ready to reach your life and business goals? Let's get accountable. This is the time to maximize your productivity with the Power Sisters method. Aside from being paired up with your own Power Sister, you also gain access to an incredible supportive community, additional guidance through group coaching, monthly challenges, exclusive workshops, a book club, co-working time, and so many more awesome, awesome things. Are you ready to become a Power Sister? Watch your dreams and intentions become a reality together. We do a lot of healing also together. We do conversations together because no one has done it alone. Head over to findmypowersister.com to learn more. Again, findmypowersister.com. So this conversation was amazing. We obviously, of course, talked about the mountains. We, of course, talked about the coaching and the work that she does. We talked about growing up in this city and moving to the mountains, how she bought a cabin because she needed to reconnect to the earth, or she just needed to move to the mountains, which is amazing. And so much more, so much more. This conversation is super full, super fun. Sin más, here's my conversation with Dania Rivas. Dania, welcome to Café con Pam. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yes, I'm so excited to have this conversation because I think we're kindred spirits and we have this love for nature and this collective healing that I can't wait to dive in. So the first question we always ask is, what's your heritage?
Yeah, and I like this question and I appreciate this question. Well, both of my parents are Salvadorian. My dad is 100% Salvadorian. My mom is Salvadorian and a quarter Italian. And I grew up in LA. I spent my first 5 years in Lenox, and then I lived in Hawthorne until I was about like 17, 18 years old, until I went off and did my own thing.
How was growing up in LA?
Well, it was hard. I struggled. I'm not going to lie. There's a lot of things I love about LA, a lot of things I really appreciate. The diversity being one of them, having my family there. You know, when I was growing up, I had my entire family in LA, so that was special. But not a lot of nature. So nature was something I was exposed to through magazines, books, on the TV, you know, that was pretty much the limit. Although I have to say my first kind of like exposure and introduction to nature was with my abuelita. She is a nature lover as well. She saw that in me. So she made it her responsibility like that each day I got some kind of exposure to nature. And that came in the form of hanging out in their backyard with their fruit trees or going to the neighbor's house to pick loquats off of their tree or just going on walks in the neighborhood. And I remember my abuelita would let me explore kind of like abandoned houses, you know, nothing unsafe or anything like that. But, you know, it's overgrown with grass and everything. So she's like, explore. So that kind of like sparked my curiosity for the natural world. So, but then I wanted more in LA, just being surrounded by concrete. It was tough. It was hard.
I bet. So something interesting for me, for example, I grew up in Mexico City and sometime in LA. And so most of my life was in the Mexico City, which is city, very similar to LA. And I mean, my abuelita had this love for herbs, for example, you know, like the tecitos, and they always like somehow go to the back and they bring something to make a tea for. But for me, I didn't get exposed to nature until I was an adult. And that's when I realized, like, where has this been all my life? Almost like I didn't know what I didn't know. Also because I grew up with a single mom and my mom didn't, to this day, she's like, why do you go suffer in the woods? Like, why do you, you know? And I'm like, you don't understand.
My family sees it too. My parents anyway. Why do you suffer?
Why do you go play? Why do you go sleep outside when it's cold? And, you know.
Yeah.
So for me, I didn't experience this until I was an adult. But for you, your abuelita was like, hey, go find, even when there's the surrounding is of concrete, go look at the outgrown grass in there and explore and see what you find. That's awesome. Outside of the abuelita supporting that part of you, did you have any other exposure to nature?
Like I said, on TV, you know, listening to David Attenborough, who, you know, hosted the most awesome nature shows. As a kid growing up, that's how I got, you know, most of my nature. And it didn't come from watching, or, you know, people that look like me. You know, David Attenborough was it, and I have a lot of love for him. But that was pretty much the extent until later on, you know, in adulthood. I would say, like you, that was when I really was exposed to nature, where I kind of had the freedom to, you know, go off and do my own thing. And, you know, I moved away. I went away for college, and that's when I started hiking.
Where'd you go?
I went to San Diego State University.
Oh, I'm in San Diego.
Yeah, San Diego was a blast. That's where I really began kind of like getting into hiking. You know, it was kind of an outlet for me to kind of relax, you know, being a full-time student. And so I found a lot of comfort and healing in nature, something that I didn't know I needed for the longest time. I began to see like how thirsty and hungry I was for it, and what, because I wasn't getting it in LA. And not to knock LA, there are great places to go out there and be with nature, but San Diego is where it started for me. And from there, it was just like, I did not look back. I just went right into it. I tried to expose myself to nature in so many ways, you know, whether it was solo, doing solo hikes, or getting together with a small group of friends that like to go hike or camp, was also something that was so much fun and important to me, just to kind of get away, you know, and not have to, you know, be surrounded by technology, not having to like recreate all the comforts of my home, like putting myself in a little bit of an uncomfortable setting and just seeing how I do. And those were really powerful learning moments for me.
For sure. Did you ever not feel safe when you were in those spaces?
Totally. Yeah. There's a lot of times where I was like, what in the world am I doing? This is scary. This is unsafe. Something's going to happen. You know, all these things, all these different scenarios running through my mind. I realized that was my parents speaking through me.
Yes.
You know, it was that perspective. And it spoke through me and to me for a very long time. Once I had that realization, like, oh, this is my parents' voice that's coming through. I was able to hear my own voice and not have so much fear, but be cautious, you know, be safe. Use caution, but not to be afraid of being out in the middle of nowhere, you know. But now, things are different now, because as a woman of color in our political climate, going out, and I'm in Oregon, you know.
Yeah.
So going out into the middle of nowhere, being a solo hiker is scary. I am scared. I am scared of who I'm going to run into and what could happen. So sadly, I haven't been doing it as much. You know, I haven't been going out on hikes unless I'm with other friends. But then it's like when I'm with other friends that are, you know, people of color, like, well, now we have this fear as a group.
It's a bigger group at risk.
Yeah. I mean, if there is comfort in that we're a bigger group, there's more of us. But still, we have that collective fear, you know, something could happen out there. So it's unfortunate.
Yeah. And I want to talk about the mountain so bad, but let's explore your story a little bit first, because I have so much to say about the mountains. So you go off to college in San Diego. San Diego is very hikey. There's a lot of mountains here and there's a lot of things that you can do, which is great. I don't do as much as I probably could. Not should, but could. But after that, then is that when you go to Oregon?
No. So I swore up and down that I would never go back to LA. But when I was done with college, I studied kinesiology. I found an opportunity to work in LA, you know, somewhere along the lines of being a kinesiologist in the health field. So I went back to LA and I got a job as a paralysis recovery specialist. So I worked with people who suffered spinal cord injuries.
Wow.
And so I would work with them to gain any possible movement that they could get. And that was quite a journey. I did that for a while. Then I got injured. I hurt my neck to the point where I wasn't able to do that work anymore. That was pretty ironic. I was like, okay. So I couldn't help my clients anymore physically. I just couldn't do it. So there was no future for me in that field. And I saw that as an opportunity to go back to school and pursue my other passion of working in the environmental field. So I went back and I got my master's in education in curriculum instruction with a focus in environmental education.
Wow.
Yeah. And, like, you know, just being in the environmental studies just really gave me more confidence to, like, continue to pursue outdoor kind of sports activities, you know, continue to hike, you know, continue to connect with the natural world. So I then moved to the mountains.
I see.
Yeah, I went to the mountains. I bought a cabin.
What? She was not playing around the mountains.
No, I could not believe that I did something like that, but I wanted to go for it. It just felt so right. And so I moved out there. My parents were not happy about it. Actually, the majority of my family was like, what are you doing? Again, that fear.
By yourself?
No, I was with my partner at the time. So okay. I was with someone. I don't think I was that brave yet to go out there completely alone. So I spent time in the mountains, living out there, cultivating a really beautiful, deep connection with nature out there. That was a very pivotal time in my life to be able to connect to nature in that way. And a huge privilege. I had this little cabin surrounded by trees. I was like on a canyon. So I would spend my mornings first drinking coffee on my balcony in silence, surrounded by trees, just hearing the birds, you know, no traffic, no other people, nothing like that.
No construction.
Yeah, no construction. It was awesome. And I would spend my mornings in that kind of solitude, you know, in that peace. And it just really helped set the tone for the rest of the day, you know, helped me slow down, really be present with my body, with my thoughts, something that I did not know I could do. You know, like living in the city, there's constant noise and you're bombarded with all these things from the moment you wake up. That was incredibly healing for me. And then I would sometimes hike down into this canyon and hang out by the stream, and just kind of listen to the water. And it was so deep down in the canyon that when I'd look up, there's like no sign of civilization, nothing. So I felt like it was just me, you know, and it actually was. It was just me surrounded by nature. And that was just an incredible experience. But then I lived there.
Plot twist.
Yeah, I loved it and everything. And I appreciated, you know, living there and so much gratitude for that time in my life. But I was still within the reach of the city. If I had to get anything, groceries, you know, run errands, I had to drive down. And then, bam, I was back in the city surrounded by thousands, millions of people. So I was like, no, it's not enough. So I decided to move. And I made the decision, like, I'm going to a place that I've always wanted to live in, not the Pacific Northwest. I made the decision, and 3 months later, I was in Portland. I was just like, I'm doing it. I'm going. I left my cabin and went to Portland. Portland is a city. Yes. Not as big, you know, as LA. It's not as overwhelming, but I wanted to find a place out here where I could recreate, you know, what I had in the mountains in Southern California and leave my cabin and still be surrounded by nature. You know, So I'm in Portland and I'm trying to find and discover that place where I can have, you know, my solitude and just be immersed in nature again. So that's kind of my journey here, or, you know, what I'm hoping to get out here in Portland. But Portland itself is so awesome. I love the city.
I really like Portland.
Yeah.
And the Pacific Northwest is pretty magical, I would say. I've visited a couple times. Something key that you said is I decided. I decided I was going to move, and 3 months later I moved. And I think that's so important. Decisions, when we make a decision, is so important. And of course, there's trauma that needs to be healed. There's, you know, privilege sometimes. There's like all these layers, and making a decision, it's one step that you can almost like assign it to the universe. I'm ready. Let's work together for this. Would you agree?
Totally, totally. And that really speaks to me. That really resonates, because I was always afraid to make decisions and stick with it, right? And see it through. But what led me to this decision, this really powerful decision, is, I kid you not, I would wake up in the middle of the night with a voice saying, go, go. Like, go already. I would wake up because it'd be so loud. I'm like, what in the world is happening? What is
this? I got chills.
You know, and it would keep happening. And I'd have these, they were like almost like memories of me being in the Pacific Northwest. And I had never visited. I've never been there before. But I would see these very clear images. I don't know if it was in Oregon or in Washington, but I just knew it was the Pacific Northwest. So I'd have this voice telling me, go already. And I'd see these images. I'd have dreams about it, like memories as though I'd been there before. And I couldn't ignore it, you know? I couldn't ignore it. And I was like, you know what? I think these are my guides, you know, speaking to me and just telling me enough is enough. There is something out there for you. You've got to pursue it. You've got to go after it. Do not let fear get in the way, or all the what ifs, you know, all the what ifs and what can go wrong and this and that. And so I said, I'm doing it. I'm going. I decided, and I stuck with it. And it was one of the most powerful decisions that I've ever made. And when I got here, I felt like I had been here before. I felt at home. It was the strangest feeling, because I'd never felt at home in LA. Even though I love LA for many reasons, I just never felt like I belonged there. But when I got here, I was like, oh, yeah, okay.
This is it.
Yeah, this is it. Since I've been here, it has taken me down the most awesome journey. Yeah, everything that I have now is because I decided to move here, because I took that risk. I took that leap.
I love it. So you make the decision. Did you ever doubt that decision?
No, I didn't doubt it. I was afraid. There's some fear there, but I didn't doubt it. And I've never regretted it. Moving here, being surrounded by nature, It made me connect even deeper, and it made me connect with myself, and it made me pay closer attention to what I really wanted in life, what I really want in life, and not to have to make decisions based off of the status quo or what, you know, family thinks is going to be best for me or what other people think is going to be best for me. I finally had a chance to listen to that still small voice inside me, and very quickly led me down the path to become what I am today, which is a coach. I'm a certified professional coactive coach and a certified professional diversity coach. And I specialize in inclusive leadership. And I do this for the outdoor industry, which is incredible.
Full circle.
I was like, what can I do here with, you know, this industry that I love, and I found something that is very rewarding, speaks to me, fulfills me, something I'm good at, and I apply it for an industry that I really care about.
So fun. Before we take the coffee break, I'll share the story about my Pacific Northwest hike. I've shared it before on the show, but I'm in Seattle. This is when I used to work in corporate, and you know, when you are in corporate trips, you work in the morning, you get the evenings off or whatever. And so my last meeting was at like 4. And I was like, you know, I have time to like do a little short hike. It's going to be all right. And so I look it up and I'm in my little tiny rental and it's in this mountain. I don't remember the details. But when I'm going up the mountain, I see this guy walking. Like it's one of those like you go around the mountain to go up. And I see this guy walking and he's clapping. And I'm like, okay. And you know, the mountain's so white. So I'm like, this dude about to kill me. Like, I just better be going, you know? And so, cause this is strange. And so I keep going up the mountain. I get to the top where the forest is, or like the trees are. And I like start walking and the trees are so tall that the moment you step foot, I mean, it was 4 o'clock. So by the time I got there, it was like, I don't know, 4:35 maybe. The moment I stepped foot, like it was pitch black. It was dark because the trees are so big and, you know, and so I was like, well, zero equipment, like no lights. I probably didn't even have shoes. You know, I was just thinking that I was going to take a leisurely walk in the woods. So something, you know, your intuition, your inner guide is like, maybe it's time to turn around. So I turned around and then my car was the only car parked there. So I get back in my car and I come down the mountain. I didn't spend more than like maybe 5-10 minutes, like come back down the mountain. And then the same guy that was clapping, he like starts waving at me. He stops me. And I was like, here he comes. He's really going to kill me now. So I rolled down my window, like the littlest, like the smallest possible. And I'm like, hi. And he's like, drive careful because of the bear, because there's a bear and that's why I'm clapping. So be careful. Oh, and I was like, okay.
I see. Smart. Okay. Yeah. That's why I was clapping. Oh my goodness. And you could have easily
I was like the bear's bait, like up there walking without anything, literally nothing. I probably, I would venture to say that I probably had my work clothes on, like probably just put like tennis shoes. Yeah. And so my partner, he's taught me most things about the mountains. He's a white dude, which, you know, makes sense, I guess. And he was like, I can't believe that you like, in what mind? And I'm like, well, I just wanted to feel the nature and the land, which why I was standing, like, why not? But now I'm more careful. You know, those were in the beginning days of my nature explorations.
Thank you, intuition. Thank you, guys, to be like, nope. Turn around and go back to your car.
I know. And that was intense. So there are reasons why to be careful in nature outside of, you know, people. Animals could also.
Totally. Yeah. I would actually rather encounter an animal than another.
Right. I know. Yeah, David has actually seen cubs, like bears and cubs and stuff. I haven't yet. I'll probably freak out a little, but it's fun. Let's take a coffee break. Okay, Dania. So you've mentioned coffee already. So you do drink coffee.
I do.
How do you drink your coffee?
Just plain coffee. Well, I actually don't drink coffee. I drink mushroom coffee.
Ooh,
Yeah, I switched over to mushroom coffee about a year ago, and I just like it so much better. But just plain, I put it in my French press every morning, just drink it down. It has to be nice and hot.
Yes.
That's what I'm gloomy days here in Portland. It's so comforting to have a nice hot cup of mushroom coffee.
Do you make it? Do you buy the – because I talk about mushroom coffee and I get it from Four Sigmatic.
Yeah, from here. Yeah.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. I love me some Four Sigmatic. And I have a code, Stay Shining, gives you 15% off if you want to use it for any purchase. I'm pretty plain and simple too.
Yeah.
It's black coffee.
Yeah.
My brother, who's kind of like a little coffee snob, it's really funny because my mom still drinks café con leche, you know? And so we were laughing the other day because she tends to, whether it's tea or coffee or whatever, she gives you like 3/4 of a cup in case you want to add whatever you want to add. Mm-hmm. And so my brother's always like, do you want me to pay a little more for my full cup or what? Like, because we always get like 3/4 of a cup. And she's like, well, in case you want to add milk or whatever. And we're like, no, mom, we don't. We don't. Like, oh, full cup of coffee. Full cup of coffee.
Yep. That's my mom drinks it the same way. She always puts the milk. And I lived with my parents for like 6 months, you know, after like coming back from college and everything. When I was a heavy coffee drinker, my mom would do the same. She'd leave enough. And I'm like, mom, you know, I don't need room.
Right.
No, I drink it all black, like my dad. You know, he drinks his coffee the same way. But my mom was like, we should put a little bit of milk in it and sugar and all that. I'm like, aye.
No. So, yeah. So funny. All right, let's get back to the show. So, Dania, you go through this exploration of making a decision. You made the decision, moved to the woods. And then do you agree that somehow, like, when you make the decision, things start falling into place? Things fall out of place too, because, you know, it's not like when you make a decision, all of a sudden, like, the doors open. There's also challenges because they're supposed to be with that decision that you made. Sometimes when you make a decision, you're supposed to let go of some things, and those could hurt a little. Was that kind of how it happened for you?
Totally. Yeah. And I say totally a lot coming from LA.
Same.
But yeah, that was very much the case. I did expect, you know, for a lot of doors to open and making this powerful decision, but I wasn't overly optimistic. I did have to expect some kind of challenges and being able to work with those challenges. I knew it wasn't going to all be perfect and the smooth transition, you know, living out here. So things did fall into place when I was very realistic about my situation. Yes, I could be optimistic and, you know, be very positive about, you know, this decision that I made and this change in my life that's occurring. But I also had to pay attention and not be so much negative and be pessimistic, but be realistic. You know, like, okay, if the challenges come my way, acknowledge that there's challenges and how am I going to handle these things, rather than saying, oh, like everything's going wrong, you know, like, now I'm not going to be able to do what I want to do. I'm not going to be able to fulfill my purpose and my goals because this thing, you know, something went wrong. Something got in my way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, that's going to happen. And so how do you handle it? How do you deal with it? What are different perspectives that you can look at this situation in, right? Not being stuck in a perspective of like, oh, everything's going to go wrong now, right? Because that you can spiral. That can spiral out of control. So, and that was something that I always did in the past. I was always, you know, I saw a challenge. I was like, I failed. That's it. You know, I can't move on. I can't do anything. I'm going to fail again. And that was my, you know, inner critic.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of it was my inner critic. So holding that space for, well, expecting, yeah, things are going to go wrong. There's going to be obstacles. How do I handle it? How do I move forward? How do I best handle these situations? And how do I not allow my inner critic to take over, right? I don't want that voice to take over and rule my world either. So facing challenges with my inner leader, you know, my inner light, my sage, you know, with my guides, how do I face these problems with that perspective?
I love that. And having the awareness to not over-catastrophize things, which we tend to do because of many things. So how do you, for the listeners, how do you access your inner sage?
Well, my inner sage, my inner light is called Sophia. It's my middle name, but I channel my abuelita in a way. Part of it is channeling her, but it's this inner leader that I kind of embody that is very wise, like holds an old like wisdom, holds a very like realistic perspective and approach to things, and uses fierce courage. There's this element of courage in there, but it's like, it's fierce. It's like going after something, you know, just kind of owning, you know, something that I'm, something that I'm going to own and go after. That's my inner leader, my sage. It is very powerful. I don't use it as often as I would like, as often as, you know, as I should. But yeah, that's my inner leader. When it comes through, it is pretty powerful. And it's the wisdom that I hold from my grandmother, you know, other women in my life, men as well. My animals, you know, like the spirit and the teachings of my animals and of nature, the teachings that I've gained from nature as well. So it's kind of like this cumulative like persona that I take on.
How did you find her?
Through my own training when I was preparing to become a coach, my coaching program. Part of our training, which I know you're familiar with as a coach, you know, we had to become familiar with our saboteurs, that inner voice that tells you you're not enough.
Mm-hmm.
I had to become just as familiar with my inner leader and even more familiar so that inner leader could speak more loudly than, you know, my critic and my saboteur. So we did a lot of work on meeting that stage. Lots of work, and that's why I became very familiar with Sophia. You know, what she sounds like, what she feels like, what she has for me, the gifts that she holds for me, and embodying it and owning it.
Mm.
Yeah. So that was a lot of work. Lots of work.
I hear you. Totally. Instead of Power Sisters, my group coaching program we're doing this month, actually, we're working on listening to our inner guide and listening to our inner guide to give us confidence.
Yeah.
Which is listening to that sage part of you. And it's a challenge, to say the least.
It is. Yep.
Mm-hmm. But it's work. And growth comes with work. Not always, but a lot of times, you know, if that's why they call them growing pains, because it's mm-hmm. It hurts a little.
I was going to say, it can be painful. Oh, yeah. It can totally, that growth and transformation isn't all, you know, good feelings and butterflies and all that. It can be painful. It can be. But yeah, we learn and grow through it, and we're able to be with that pain just a little bit more and a little bit more, you know, it gets a little bit easier.
I love the analogy of the butterfly, you know, that if you help a butterfly come out of the cocoon, she's not going to be strong. She might even die if you help her. But if you allow her to go through the pain of really pushing her wings out and really going through the process, as painful as it might be during the moment, that's going to be the force and the strength that she will have as she flies. And sometimes when we love people, we want to help them.
I love this. Yes, that's beautiful. It wasn't what I was like thinking, but I'm like, yeah, no, now it is. That's totally it. I love it. That's really well said.
Yeah, and another thing that I think it's important to, I mean, for me, I guess I'm telling this to myself, that sometimes when we love people and we're like, I can help you with something, or we see them going through stuff and we want to help them, it's really going back to the decision. It's not until they decide that they're going to grow, because it's self-responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The growth comes from within.
It really does. And that's a hard lesson to learn. As a Latina, my parents experienced a lot of trauma, you know, and, you know, what they went through in El Salvador. And families tend to be very close, you know, we're there for each other. And part of that culture makes me want to also protect my parents, help them through their pain, help them through their trauma. but I can only do that to a certain extent, and it's not fully my responsibility. And that was really hard to come to terms with and to accept that I cannot completely help them. A lot of their growth and healing is going to come from
them.
So, yeah, that was always, that was really difficult to go through. But, you kind of have to step back sometimes and let people just deal with their stuff, get through their stuff, heal from it on their own.
Totally. Here comes the totally. California, I can't help it. But yes, no, I agree. And I think for me, what gives me comfort is to remember that with my own healing, I'm healing backwards too. And I'm healing forward. And so it goes back to self-responsibility and how I can own what I can own and I can control what I do and then sending it backwards. And hopefully they'll catch it. Yeah. If not, then I'm doing what I can. You know, we're doing what we can.
Absolutely. I love what you just said there. You know, it can go back. We can go through our own healing, break those cycles of like generational trauma and be that role model, be that light of like, look, here I am. Here's how I'm doing it. And maybe, you know, generations before us, our parents and our grandparents can see that, you know, help, and it can help them kind of find their way of healing. If they're ready for it, if they're up to it, you know, if they want to do that. And then, yeah, and then we become like the role models for the future generations too, you know, to help them continue to break these cycles of generational trauma. So
yeah,
I love that you're saying this.
Yeah, we're working on it. We're working on it.
Yeah.
I know. Okay, Daniel, so I want to talk about your work, and I do want to talk about The Mountain So White, because I have this joke with David. Every time we go to the mountains, I like search for brown people.
Yeah.
So what I do when I arrive to a mountain, I always say, teach me what I need to learn. And then jokingly, I'm like, let's see how many brown people can we count. And then on the way back down, at the end, I'm like, mountain so white. Mm-hmm. Zero. I was the only one. It's really interesting. We were in Colorado one time and we went with his family, his parents, and we went to the store to grab something. And so we're driving and there's this van, like in the intersection, there's this van that it's a black guy. And I was like, oh my gosh, there's somebody that's not white. And David looks at me. He's like, he's probably just passing through town. Don't get too excited. And I never saw him again. And it was a tiny town that, you know, only like so many people live in there.
Yeah.
I never saw that person again.
Outdoor recreation, you know, the environmental field. Yeah, it's white. It's predominantly white for sure. It is beginning to diversify, but yeah, it's still white male dominant. I did, you know, hiking back in California. Yeah, I would see other black and brown people on the trails, but it was still, you know, mostly white. Then coming out here, huh?
Oh my gosh.
I was that person too, like, how many? Let's see. Well, if I were to run into other people, because the trails out here are just like, yeah, they're way out there in the solitude. It's awesome. But I was like, yeah, let's see how many, you know, people of color I'm going to run into on the trail. Yeah, it was usually none. And then when you do, you're like, oh, yes. Hi.
I know. I see you.
Yeah, I see you. Yeah. But, you know, it was important that I got out there. And I hiked because I'm, you know, that person that's going out there and diversifying those trails.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I'm afraid, you know, even when I'm scared to go out there.
Yes. And the mountains, I think, can also be intimidating. And I think of my mom all the time, for example, which is like, I wouldn't even know how to enter a trail, you know, like how to find the way and how to find the way back. And then insert the accessibility of things. So hiking shoes are expensive. Not that you need them.
Mm-hmm.
One time we did a pretty intense mountain, I would say. It was more like bouldering. And we saw this, he was a brown guy with like pretty simple tennis shoes. One little tiny plastic bottle of water. I was cold, so I had layers. He just had a t-shirt. And I'm like, look, I guess you don't need a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But if you go into an outdoor store, things are expensive.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, yes. I couldn't really get into any kind of like backpacking or hiking until I was like making adult money, you know, I had my adult jobs. Yeah, because it's incredibly expensive. So yeah, I go for things that are on clearance. REI, wherever else, always go for the clearance item. That's a huge barrier, you know, for people, you know, to experience recreation is to, one, want to have the proper equipment but can't afford it, or two, think that you have to have this certain equipment.
Correct.
You have to have this certain look, you know, to be accepted, yes, in, you know, the in-group, you know, of outdoor culture, which is mostly defined by white culture, by white people, and how they do the outdoors.
Yes. Let's dismantle all of that, because you really don't. Have you seen the documentary of that woman that I forget her name, but she is an indigenous woman who runs, and she runs in Huaraches?
Oh, nice.
She did an ultra.
Oh, yeah.
In Huaraches.
I mean, yeah, there's things that work for you, you know, that maybe culturally, you know, you've been experienced to, and that's what works for you, right? Yeah. But yeah, you don't have to have the fancy stuff. Like, no. Like, be careful, right? You do you in the outdoors in what feels authentic to you, right? Be safe about it as well. You know, don't put yourself in any danger. Prepare. Be prepared to go out there, but don't feel like you have to be invited or have permission to go out there if you look like the dominant group, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, having the fancy brands and the labels and all that stuff. It's like, okay, if you can buy it and you want it, okay, great. But don't feel like that is your ticket, you know, or gives you the permission to then go into it. It's like, no. It doesn't need to be that way. So
yeah. Well, especially because nature is art. Like, that's Mama Earth. Belongs to us.
Exactly. Yeah. Nature isn't going to say, you don't have the right hiking shoes on. No.
Right. You don't wear your wool socks today. So
yeah. So, you know, nature is welcoming. Yes, it does. It invites you in no matter who you are. But it, at the same time, also asks you to respect nature, respect the elements, you know. Again, you know, the speaking to safety, you know, be aware, you know, of what you're, of where you're going, what you're going to get yourself into. But yeah, but come as who you are.
Yeah. So tell me about your work. Combine the things that you love.
Yeah. The environment is what really drives what I do as a professional. And there's two parts to what I do as a professional coach. So one is as a certified diversity coach, I specialize in inclusive leadership, and that's through one-on-one or group and team leadership coaching. And so I work with organizations that are looking to create more diverse, equitable, inclusive workplace culture. So helping them navigate that, look at where their culture is currently and where they want to get to. You know, what does it mean for them to create a more inclusive workplace culture, and steps and things and tools, you know, that they need to get there, to get to that point. That's one part of what I do. And then the other part, I work as a collaborative coach. It's a methodology, like the philosophy of the coaching program that I trained with. And it's a really beautiful framework, because the term coactive, it refers to like the fundamental nature of a coaching relationship, where the coach and the client are in collaboration together to create something for the client. So this relationship looks at, like, you know, who we are in relationship, who we are in being and what we want to be, and how we are actively creating. So the co is like the being, like the feminine energy. And then the active part of it, the masculine energy, the doing part. So it's this really beautiful play of how I work with clients to create something for the client, whatever it may be, wherever they, you know, whatever goals they may have, wherever they want to get to in life. So there's those two parts in coaching that I do. And I do very much integrate the co-active method in my inclusive leadership, because when it comes to DEI, a lot of that work is personal work. Mm-hmm. And co-active is just beautiful in helping people do deep dives into their beliefs, their backgrounds, their bias, you know, how these beliefs came to be. And so a lot of people think like it's, no, we're going to, you know, it's just going to be training. We're going to learn as a group, you know, how to become anti-racist and all that. And it's like, it's going to start with you. And it's going to start on a deep level. And the co-active coaching bit is just so beautiful in helping people arrive at that very vulnerable side of this work.
That hurts a little, but it's necessary.
Oh, yeah, it's necessary. Yeah, it's going to be uncomfortable. It's not going to feel so nice. There's going to be a lot of awareness, but it is absolutely necessary to do this work in an authentic way. If you're going to do this work, you've got to do the personal work. So, yes, yeah, so I work with organizations, mainly organizations that have predominantly white culture. And in the outdoor industry,
probably all of them.
Yeah. You know, the outdoor industry is very white. It's a very strong embedded white culture within organizations. So there's a lot of dismantling to do with that. And I also work with BIPOC professionals that are experiencing toxic workplace culture. You know, BIPOC professionals that enter this field because they love nature. They respect the environment. They want to do something to conserve our earth. Mm. And then to feel like you don't belong and feel like you're not going to make it in this industry, and then feel like you failed, and then ultimately leave the industry because other people can't understand, you know, your differences. Like, that to me is, it's heartbreaking to witness that. I went through that. That was kind of like the impetus behind like doing this work. You know, I went through racism, discrimination, feeling, you know, experiencing prejudice and getting to the point where I was like, I can't do this. This was a joke. I'm not going to make it in this industry and I'm done. But knowing like, no, that's my purpose. Like, screw that. Like, no, I'm going to do something about this. So, and I see a lot of BIPOC professionals going through this. You know, the outdoor industry is diversifying, which is great, but organizations do not know how to retain diverse talent.
That's where you come in.
That's where I come in, and I help these organizations understand what their culture is like, how it's toxic, how they're harming people, first acknowledge and become aware of it, and how people on an individual level are doing this as well. Everyone's responsible for this kind of culture, and then helping them navigate that, heal it, and then land in a place where they are truly practicing inclusive culture. So people stay with their jobs and feel empowered to stay in the industry. So that's how we're going to truly diversify it.
Right. So thank you for all you do. I think it's important. And I commend you for not quitting and saying, okay, this happened to me. How can I make it better so it doesn't happen to others?
Yeah.
I think that's super commendable. I don't know. I couldn't find another word.
Thank you. Yeah. I don't want people to give up. I don't want them to leave the field, because it's absolutely important that we all learn how to work together for the betterment of the environment. You know, mm-hmm. If we can't work together, the environment is going to suffer. I mean, it already is.
Right.
But it's like, we've got to work together and we've got to find our common ground, and we need to understand and respect our differences to have a harmonious workplace.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And I think talking about the industry professionals in the conservation outdoor industry, hey, I would think it's important to also have them, because I've been in places where there are brown people camping, for example, and I'm like, let's give them the benefit that they forgot to pick up their trash, because I don't know. And so, and not to say that it's only them, but because we don't have as much access to that outdoor life and the lifestyle, that it's also a way of reclaiming the land and relearning how to also respect Mother Nature. So if we have people that look like us, they could come and be like, okay, look, you probably were not taught this. This is how it's done. Or like even knowing to not leave food outside if you're camping because animals can come and like eat it all, or, you know, things like that, that we don't necessarily, it's lack of access, lack of education. So I think having the industry professionals that understand the culture then can in turn come and teach people more and make everything much more inclusive, not only for the workplace, but also for people to come and visit.
Yeah, that's a big part of it too, is the recreational part. You know, if you're someone that doesn't have regular exposure and, you know, maybe doesn't see like the etiquette, you know, of like no trace behind, you know, it's not entirely your fault. You know, there's just a lack of education there.
Yes.
There's ways of, you know, first, like, yay, I'm glad people want to get out there and go camp and all of that. Beautiful, right? And there's a responsibility with it. And education that comes with that, so we can conserve, sustain, and regenerate those places, regenerate that land. So I worked with the Forest Service for a little while, and that was one of the biggest things, was helping get people, you know, access to this kind of education in whatever way that needed to happen, so people can do, you know, recreate responsibly, respect the land, because this is not our land. No, it's not our land. So there's a great level of respect that comes with protecting it. So in LA, I saw it all the time.
I know.
Just not knowing how to camp responsibly, how to hike responsibly, leaving a lot of trash behind. That was always so heartbreaking to witness.
Yes.
But I wasn't like, oh, these people, you know, it's like, no, I'm not going to attack like their behavior. You know, it's just like, there's a lack of
they don't know what they don't know.
Yeah, exactly. So that's, yeah, part of my job too, is increasing access to that education, increasing awareness of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's do it. I'm down for that too. I mean, I'm still learning, you know, I didn't learn the mountains until later. You know, now I know not to get out of the car by yourself in the middle of the woods. But hey, research. Okay, Dania, this was awesome. Tell us where we can find you, all the places.
Yeah, so I'm mostly on Instagram, and my handle is Inclusively Outdoors. It's actually the name of my business, Inclusively Outdoors LLC. So that is where I mostly hang out, but you can also find me on LinkedIn. Dania Rivas, and I believe the handle for that is also Inclusively Outdoors.
Website?
InclusivelyOutdoors.com. So that is the primary spot to reach out to me. So other social media, but to be honest, I don't really check it.
I hear you. Perfect. And do you have a remedio that you want to share with us?
Okay. So this one works. Got this one from my grandma. If you ever have a headache, any kind of tension headache, take a hot towel and put a drop of rubbing alcohol on it and just put it right over your forehead and go lie down for a little while. So that's the headache remedy. That,
nice.
Yeah, I don't experience as many headaches anymore, thank goodness. But before, I would always have headaches, which was like awful. But I would use the rubbing alcohol on the towel and it was great. It worked.
I mean, look. I've been asking for remedios since I started, because we're all about it.
I have a long list of them.
I know. It's one of my projects is to make the list of all the remedios I've received. But you know, 200 episodes and counting. Okay. It's a lot of remedies too.
That's awesome. I like that.
Yeah. Do you have a quote or mantra that you live by?
Well, I actually just have like a sentence, like a phrase that I go back to and read, and it's by Ruth King, who is a life coach and leadership coach. She's also Buddhist and she teaches meditation. So look her up, Ruth King. She's awesome. But there's just this part in her, in one of her books that says, whatever our parents and ancestors could not or would not resolve is gifted to us to transform. This is our karmic reality and our challenge.
Oh my gosh. It's one of my favorites so far that I've been given. Thank you for that gift. So good.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I love it. Tania, thank you so much for coming to Kapok and Pump. This is awesome. I feel like we can stay talking. I also feel like you're a distant cousin because we kind of look alike. When I was watching you talk, I'm like, are we related?
I don't know. Seriously, yeah. And we got our glasses and everything. So.
Yeah, the hair.
Yeah, the hair.
You have one dimple or two?
I have two. Yeah, the shadow kind of coming down, but I got two dimples. Yeah, totally.
I only have one. I know. Yeah.
And it's always nice to like speak to someone that does like feel like family. You know, you're just like,
yes,
right away at ease. So yeah, this was so much fun. I had a great time with you. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I mean, I'm always down to talk about the mountains. And I mean, of course, your work that's so needed. I mean, I don't know if I've ever met anyone who does anything like this. How many more of you are there?
To be honest, it's growing. It's new. Usually you hear consultants doing this kind of work, you know, DEI consultants, DEI being diversity, equity, and inclusion. But coaching is gaining a lot more attention. And I'm so happy because coaching is a very different approach to this kind of work. Again, because it goes down to that personal part of it. Coaching is an incredibly powerful tool for that self-transformation. So honestly, there aren't a whole lot of us, but you will begin to hear more and more about DEI coaches out there doing this kind of thing. So, and I want to see more, and I hope to see more.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you so much for being a Kapok and Pump.
Stay shining.
And that was Tania Rivas, Manis. Tell me what you loved about the conversation, what resonated with you. Are you going to head out to the mountains this weekend, perhaps? Are you going to explore a park and see how you can connect to Mama Earth and explore? Because why not? Why not? One thing that Tania and I talked about after the interview was to potentially do something together. She loves the mountains. I love the mountains. I've done hikes with you all, and she's in Portland, which is a very super beautiful place. And so who knows? We kind of like threw it out there. I kind of said, well, let's explore possibilities. You never know. And we'll see what comes out of it. I would love to do something with her. And you know, I'm all about collaborations, of course. So stay tuned for that. It might happen. We'll see. Let me know if you want it to happen. Actually, that would be fun. Tell me what you want to see from Kapok and Pump and Tania Rivas. All right. So thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for listening. Remember, your reviews mean so much to the podcast. If you like the podcast, if you like the stories that we are sharing, your reviews truly help the podcast grow. It truly helps the podcast get out in charts. The more reviews the podcast has, the more the charts and the algorithm and podcast players, it says like, oh, okay, people are listening to it. People are leaving reviews. People are liking the show. Let me spread the message. Let me show it to other people. So your reviews are basically you telling others to listen. So I appreciate them so, so much. Thank you for leaving them. And like I always share, here are four questions you can think about when it comes to leaving a review. And consider these questions not only for Kapok and Pump, but also for other shows. Number one, what do you love about the show? Two, what were you expecting before you listened? Sometimes you click on a show and you're like, oh, you know what? The title kind of sounds interesting. Did it reach your expectations? And then what happened after you listened? How would you describe the show to your best friend? If you were talking to someone, they were like, hey, what's the last podcast you listened to? Tell me about it. That's how you could leave a review. Because a lot of times I know when we leave reviews, it's like, what do I say, right? So these questions are to help you, kind of give you like a little hand about it. So thank you so much for leaving your reviews, your ratings, your words, your DMs. Oh my gosh, your DMs make my day so much. I know I disappear from social media from time to time because I need to create space and boundaries, and seeing your messages and your DMs when I happen to show up, or even when you find the show and you send me a DM and you're like, oh my gosh, I just found you. I listened to this story and it was incredible. It inspired me and motivated me. That makes my day. And I do respond. Sometimes it takes me a minute because I'm kind of like taking space and taking time from social media, but I promise I will respond. Now, if you are new here, welcome to Café con Pam. I hope you feel like you're at home. I hope you give us another chance. Come back, listen to another interview, listen to past interviews. I wouldn't say to go way far back because, oh my gosh, those are kind of... I've learned so much. Let's say I've learned so much since then. We're almost 200 episodes in, so you have plenty to choose from. And I hope you come back and drink another cup of coffee with us. I would love, love to connect. Social media is one of the best places because we all hang out there all the time. You can follow me at Café con Pam Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. I have a free challenge. I am a recovering procrastinator and I have created this challenge to give you tools to get more organized. It's a 5-day free challenge. It's called the Café con Pam Challenge and you can go to cafeconpamchallenge.com, sign up and receive the 5 days of emails and tools and templates and all the things. Super fun. You can also join Power Sisters. It's my online, it's yours. It's actually your online community. It's a community and I pair you up with your own Power Sister. We work on mindful productivity, owning our voice. And when I say mindful, I increase the word mindful. I make it louder because we are not about getting things done and working hard. We are about getting things done with ease and flow and excitement and joy because we deserve to rest as well. So, of course, this is the community. It's my favorite. It's great. I love all the Power Sisters inside, and we are about to reopen the doors. So head over to findmypowersister.com, learn more there, sign up to get more information when we reopen. And listeners, thank you so, so much for hanging out with me today. I will share a very special episode next week for our episode 200, and I'm kind of nervous about it. I've never shared this in the show before, this story, but hey, that's actually why I started using my voice. So stay tuned for that. I'm going to leave you a little cliffhanger about it. It's also trigger warning, frankly. So next week, we're going to be here with episode 200. Oh my gosh, who would have thought, right? That's... Back in 2016, I started this little show that I wanted one person to hear me. And then here we are, 200 episodes later. Thank you so much. It's all because of you. Seriously. Y bueno, como siempre, never forget to stay shining.